Riding a crowded tram, I'm joined by a couple dozen passengers taking in what Winterthur is known for, the gardens. Spring's just settling in here, and soon vast swaths of color will dot the rolling hills. But inside the museum, color of a different sort hangs on the walls. Chances are you'd recognize much of it, but well, that's the point. The art on these walls is fake. I met curator Linda Eden at the front of the exhibit.
This exhibit is Treasures on Trial, and it's set up. I see a lot of cork boards and case file graphics here on the walls. It's set up as kind of a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Well, that's exactly it. It's really Treasures on Trial, the art and science of detecting fakes. And so we're really looking at the issue of fakes and forgeries. We're talking about the motivation and intent behind these forgeries. And then the history, the connoisseurship, and the scientific analysis that goes into determining whether something is fake or real.
And it seems to be hard because right off the bat we have what I think is a fake Rothko. I mean, this could be real for all I know.
Yeah, and so we love it, having it here, because it's so un-Winterthur-like. People don't associate with Winterthur with abstract expressionist artists. And this painting was featured in one of the biggest art scandals of the 21st century, the Knoedler Gallery, which was a renowned gallery. It was one of the first, I think it was the first American commercial art gallery in New York. They closed because of a scandal surrounding a multi-million-dollar selling of fakes and forgeries to various clients. And this was the first piece that the woman who brought all of those fakes to Knoedler, this was the first piece that she brought them.
And art law is something interesting in this country. It's not illegal to make a fake Rothko, right?
It's only illegal to sell it and tell somebody that it's a real one. And that is a problem. In Europe, it is illegal to create a forgery. But in this country, you're usually done for wire fraud or some kind of connection to selling it. The creation of the forgery is not illegal.
Well, let's move on through here, through the crowd. There's a bunch of things in here, and it's not even just paintings.
No, I mean, we've got fashion, we've got a couple of Chanel suits, we've got Chinese export porcelain, we've got an Andrew Wyeth watercolor that has circulated on and on through the market many, many, many times until finally it was snaffled and taken off. This is a local story, of course, for us. Andrew Wyeth painted a portrait of Henry Francis DuPont and lived up the road and was very frequently here at Winterthur. But this is a good fake, but not a great fake. And Mary Landa, who is the Wyeth collection manager, had seen this and identified it as a fake when Andy Wyeth was still alive. But it went, you know, back to the person who'd consigned it to auction, was sold privately, came back to another auction firm, disappeared, you know, was recognized as a fake, disappeared again, came out on the market again. And so now it's safely and soundly off of it. But, you know, one of the problems is that, you know, if someone buys a fake, you're out of pocket, right? You know, and so the temptation is to recirculate that and to let somebody else be fooled.
It's kind of like somebody buys a bad car. You don't want to tell the person you're selling it to that it's a lemon.
Exactly. This was the Andy Wyeth lemon.
And what makes this a lemon? Where's the bad transmission in this beautiful watercolor?
So this is the genuine watercolor, and so this the distinction here is all through connoisseurship, and so this exhibition is strong on both connoisseurship and scientific analysis. And so when Mary Landa and Andrew Wyeth himself had this fake in front of them, they knew from the differences in technique that it was not his, right? And so it's that connoisseurship, that eye, that knowing eye, that knowing, being able to compare and articulate the differences and the problems, recognizing that something is not right and being able to articulate that and show that by comparison, that is part of the training to become a connoisseur. Connoisseur is like an old-fashioned term, but we've not come up with a better one in terms of really understanding, having experience and comparative material and really understanding the methodology and technique of an artist or a cabinet maker or whatever.
It's the expert knowledge, the person who has looked at a body of work and maybe can tell that something is just not right.
Right. And so, you know, the difference is that if you've got a pigment that was not used during an artist's lifetime, you know, that's like a smoking gun.
Now, I understand that there are some Tiffany lampshades and Tiffany lamps.
Yeah, this is a great story. Tiffany lamps are very, very highly collectible and make high, high prices on the market. And what we have here are some really superb fakes. In fact, we've got such superb fakes that we got one of them mixed up and only had to change it this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at two lamps and they look exactly the same. I can't tell you which one's the fake. Which one is the fake, the one on the left or the one on the right?
So the one on the right is fake. The solder on the original Tiffany's tends to be lead-based, but the fakes that we were analyzing, and this doesn't mean that it's true for all fakes, the solder did not contain lead. And so lead is a very dangerous material, right? And so for crafting, people took lead out of that kind of solder so that you wouldn't, you know, hurt yourself. And so this one lampshade that was thought to be real doesn't have any lead in that solder, and so it is not right.
So walking through here, we've seen a fake Pollock, we've seen a fake Rothko. You have to have talent to be able to fool everybody in the industry, museum curators, private buyers, galleries in New York City. Is there a Picasso of forgers?
Oh, sure. But one of the real great and most prolific forgers of the 20th century was a guy called Elmer de Hoorey. That wasn't his real name. He also forged his name and was not what he all claimed to be. But he forged a lot of early 20th century art, Matisse and things like that. He was convicted of forgery, but committed suicide before he went to prison, leaving a large body of work, but also his palette. And that painting palette has recently been analyzed here at Winterthur by one of our graduate students working with our scientists. And the knowledge that they've gained from identifying the characteristics of the pigments and paints that he used is going to help us identify many of the forgeries that he committed that are still out there in public and private collections. He created thousands of forgeries, and many of them remain to be identified.
So do museums and collectors have to be more due diligent about vetting the pieces that they take in?
Yeah, you know, everybody should bring a critical mind. When you're collecting something, you can get carried away by your passion for wanting something so bad. You want it to be real. You know, it's really hard to keep a critical mind. It's also really easy to recognize a fake with 20/20 hindsight when we're trying to analyze it right now. And so people really need to be keep an open and critical mind. They need to be very humble about things because we've all been fooled, and anybody who doesn't think they've been fooled is been fooled. And know that our knowledge is constantly increasing. So our knowledge of identifying these fakes is constantly increasing through improved connoisseurship and scientific analysis. Researching provenance is also a very key point. But the fakers are getting better at the same time, right? So fakes and forgeries have been problematic for centuries, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Now back outside among the rolling hills at Winterthur, it makes one appreciate the authenticity of nature, because these flowers and trees aren't fake. At least I'm pretty sure. I'm Mark Earhart.